Chapter 5, The Great Reset, Building a 21st Century Fascism Machine. First of all, we have to have the definition of reset correctly. Reset, we can't think of it in terms of a sort of pushing of a button and going back to the way things were. The normal was a crisis. The normal itself was not working. John Kerry, speaking at a World Economic Forum event titled Redesigning Social Contracts in Crisis, June 24th, 2020. An international conspiracy between powerful bankers, business leaders, and government officials, secret meetings in the Swiss Alps, and calls for a new world order. The Great Reset is one henchman with an eye patch away from being a great plot for the next James Bond movie. Which, by the way, means that when Hollywood inevitably makes a blockbuster Great Reset film, the role of Glenn Beck will be played by Daniel Craig, which makes perfect sense to me, but not so much to my wife. In previous chapters, I have shown how the Great Reset will be fueled, modern monetary theory, how the conditions have come about that make it possible, the coronavirus pandemic, and what the justification is for the destruction of the current world economic system, claims of an existential climate change crisis. But to this point, I have deliberately avoided explaining the specific policy changes that the Great Reset supporters have in mind when they talk about their plans for the future. And there is a very good reason for that. Parts of the Great Reset are very, very complicated. Unlike conservative political figures like Ted Cruz or Rand Paul or left-leaning politicians like Bernie Sanders or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who typically have no problem telling the American people exactly where they stand on issues, those who favor the Great Reset often shroud their plans using coded language, largely unknown economic theories and incredibly complex charts and diagrams that make whatever the heck that guy in A Beautiful Mind was sketching look like a children's maze on the back of a Denny's kids menu. Making matters worse, the Great Reset's biggest backers have deliberately chosen to use terminology that sounds appealing to many supporters of free markets like capitalism, investments, and stakeholders, while meaning something very different from what many of us think of when we hear these ideas discussed in the United States. Of course, at times, the Great Reset movement could not be clearer. When advocates of the reset say, to achieve a better outcome, the world must act jointly and swiftly to revamp all aspects of our societies and economies, from education to social contracts and working conditions, end quote, they mean it, 273. Likewise, when they say, we need a great reset of capitalism, they mean that too, 274. And when they say, we are completely rethinking the tools of economic policy, they are not lying, 275. But as shocking as those and many other Great Reset-related statements are, they do not come even remotely close to painting the truly horrifying transformation of the world that the Great Reset movement has in mind when it talks about building its new global society. And although you will not hear Great Resetters openly calling for authoritarianism, the Great Reset is clearly a new kind of soft authoritarianism that is not too far off from the merging of markets, corporatism, authoritarianism, collectivism, and modern technology that has been embraced by the Communist Party of China in recent decades. Its confusing terminology and vague language are what make the Great Reset so dangerous and, frankly, brilliant. Openly calling for a takeover of the global economy by the ruling class would immediately alienate 90% of the general population. But by tying in the Green New Deal, a government jobs guarantee, and a host of large social welfare programs, they have managed to win over some progressives and socialists who care deeply about those issues. And by painting the movement as pro-business, pro-capitalism, a plan to improve the economy, they have managed to win over some establishment political figures on the right. But at its core, the Great Reset is not truly pro-socialism, and it is not pro-capitalism either. It is just a rebranding of the same old tired ideas that elites have pushed a million times before. Give us more power, and we promise we'll take care of you and fix the world's ills. Let us manage more of the economy, and we promise you, you'll all be wealthier for it. Give us the authority to punish the bad guys in society, and we'll save the planet from annihilation. I admit that the Great Reset is a little cleverer. Is that even a word? Than some of the schemes that the ruling class have trotted out before. But in the end, no matter what label the elitist snake oil salesman slaps on the front of the bottle, it is still poison that he is trying to sell you. Or as former Texas Governor Ann Richards once said, you can put lipstick on a hog and call it Monique, but it's still a pig. And make no mistake about it, the Great Reset is a pig, a big, fat, trough-licking pig. The trick to stopping the Great Reset, then, is first knowing how to recognize the poison, and then how to keep our friends, family, and neighbors from guzzling it down. So let's start with understanding. What exactly is the Great Reset? How do the global elites plan to impose it on the entire world? The road to serfdom. The first thing you need to know about the Great Reset is that, at least at the time of this writing, there is no official Great Reset manual, framework, or agreement that all Great Reset advocates have signed up for. It is possible such a platform will be released when the World Economic Forum holds its annual meeting, but currently you cannot go to one single place and see everything that the Great Reset entails. The Great Reset has often been presented one component at a time, as though you're given a puzzle with all of the pieces and the theme, but without a picture of what it would look like when completed. The obscurity of the final picture is, I believe, deliberate. It is much harder for people who would otherwise be deeply concerned about the Great Reset to spend too much time worrying about it because, honestly, it takes a lot of effort just to figure out what the reset really is. Luckily for you, I'm a puzzle guy. My research team and I have spent months putting all of the Great Reset pieces together so you don't have to. The best place to find information about the Great Reset is on the website of the World Economic Forum. As I have said all the way through this and pointed out certain important footnotes, go to the original source. Don't take my word for it, and certainly don't go to conspiracy websites. It's important we all are anchored in the facts. The World Economic Forum, the leaders of the Great Reset movement, host a large archive of articles, interviews, podcasts, and videos about the reset, much of which features academics, business, and government leaders and activists from around the world, including America. There's one article published on June 3rd, 2020 on WEF's website. World Economic Forum founder and executive chairman Klaus Schwab discusses in broad but relatively clear terms some of the main goals of the Great Reset. There are so many reasons to pursue a Great Reset, Schwab wrote, but the most urgent is COVID-19. Having already led to hundreds of thousands of deaths, the pandemic represents one of the worst public health crises in recent history. And with casualties still mounting in many parts of the world, it is far from over, end quote. He then cites climate change, income inequality, and other crises as key justifications for a great reset of capitalism. And then he explains, quote, left unaddressed, these crises will deepen and leave the world even less sustainable, less equal, and more fragile. Incremental measures and ad hoc fixes will not suffice to prevent this scenario. We must build entirely new foundations for our economic and social systems, end quote, 278. Schwab says there are three main components to the Great Reset agenda. One is mostly uncontroversial. quote, to harness the innovations of the fourth industrial revolution to support the public good, especially by addressing health and social challenges. During the COVID-19 crisis, companies, universities, and others have joined forces to develop diagnostics, therapeutics, and possible vaccines, establish testing centers, create mechanisms for tracking infections, and deliver telemedicine. Imagine what could be solved if similar concerted efforts were made in every sector. That's a direct quote from Klaus Schwab. There are few people in the Western world who believe that technological advancements won't play a key role in future economic development. And some of the innovations Schwab cites, such as telemedicine, are something I've been talking about for a couple of decades. Unfortunately, here in America, it took a pandemic to convince many in government to loosen regulations and make key reforms so that telemedicine and similar services made possible by recent technological achievements are available to everyone. I guess talking to your doctor through applications like Skype was just too much innovation for bureaucrats to handle. Don't you just love the government? Two other components Schwab outlines is where the real fun begins. According to Schwab, quote, the first component of the Great Reset would steer the market toward fairer outcomes. To this end, governments should improve coordination, for example, in tax, regulatory, and fiscal policy, upgrade trade arrangements, and create the conditions for a stakeholder economy. At a time of diminishing tax bases and soaring public debt, governments have a powerful incentive to pursue such action. Still quoting, moreover, governments should implement long overdue reforms that promote more equitable outcomes. Depending on the country, these may include changes to wealth taxes, to the withdrawal of fossil fuel subsidies, and new rules governing intellectual property, trade, and competition, 280. Okay, now you might be thinking, Glenn, this sounds like your standard progressive tax and spend platform, but you promised so much more. Where's the big reset of society you've been talking so much about? Hang with me, because you're going to get there very soon. For now, I just want you to remember that Schwab has said that the Great Reset would steer the market toward fairer outcomes, create the conditions for a stakeholder economy, and implement long overdue reforms that promote more equitable outcomes. All of these ideas are going to get fleshed out a lot more in detail later in this chapter, but you can already see that Schwab's ideas require dramatically altering the global economy and empowering someone, we'll find out who that someone is soon, with all the authority to redistribute the wealth and power. It is also important to remember that Schwab, who is really just one of the many important Great Reset advocates, is especially interested in something called the stakeholder economy. It's a concept that is vital to understand if you're going to grab the full weight of the Great Reset. Later in the same article, Schwab explains that another major component of the Great Reset agenda is to ensure that investments advance shared goals. Is to, quote, ensure that investments advance shared goals such as equality and sustainability. He continues, quote, here the large-scale spending programs that many governments are implementing represent a major opportunity for progress. The European Commission, for one, has unveiled plans for a 750 billion euro, which is about $826 billion, recovery fund. The U.S., China, and Japan have also had ambitious economic stimulus plans. Rather than using these funds as well as investments from private entities and pension funds to fill the cracks in the old system, we should use them to create a new one that is more resilient, equitable, sustainable in the long run. This means, for example, building green urban infrastructure and creating incentives for industries to improve their track record on environmental, social, and governance, ESG, metrics, end quote, 281. The new system Schwab is referring to is a total reworking of the way people think about business and how to evaluate them. That's why the mom and pop business didn't get the bailout and the money, because you were just filling in the cracks of the old system. Rather than focus on profits, private property rights, supply and demand from consumers, the cornerstones of free market economies, Schwab wants to develop a system based largely on environmental, social justice, and governance metrics, which, as we will explore in just a minute or two, another more complex way of suggesting that companies should be rewarded for working toward achieving social justice goals, like fighting climate change, racial inequality, and removing Aunt Jemima from syrup bottles. What it does not mean, however, is that the Great Reset is a socialist system. It is easy to fall into this trap. I did it many times in the year leading up to this book's release. The Great Reset is fundamentally about shifting wealth and power into the hands of elites, as you will see later in this chapter. Socialists and Marxists are going to be very upset when they figure out they've been used. All of this social justice stuff that Schwab and other resetters like to talk about is smoke and mirror shows. In the end, the Great Reset machine could be used to pursue any goals the ruling class deemed important. As I warned you about earlier, in Schwab's article, he is deliberately being very vague. But there are already several reasons to be alarmed. First, Schwab wants to reset capitalism and create a new system. Second, that new system would be focused on equality or equity of all outcomes. Not equality under the law. That's a goal rejected by market-based economies. And although Schwab does not say it in the passage quoted here, we will discover elsewhere that the equality Schwab wants isn't just among people within a nation, but between nations as well. The Great Reset, without a doubt, is an international movement, and we are the richest kid on the block that needs to be taken down a peg or two. Third, Schwab wants national governments and central banks to spend massive amounts of money, money that they do not have, to make his proposed changes. Schwab says elsewhere in the article that this will, quote, require stronger and more effective governments, end quote, 282. Expanding social programs. In a variety of articles, speeches, presentations, interviews, and videos, Great Reset supporters have made it abundantly clear that their plan for building a more equitable society requires large government-funded socialist or progressive programs, which would be paid for by increasing taxes on the wealthy and businesses, as well as through the printing of money by central banks like the Federal Reserve in the United States. Geeta Gopinath, the chief economist at the International Monetary Fund, said during an interview with WEF promoting the Great Reset, quote, I believe it's very important for countries to recognize that there are essential services that need to be provided in terms of healthcare, education, good governance, and a social safety net that cannot be compromised on, end quote. Sharon Burrow, the general secretary of the International Trade Union Conference, also supports the Great Reset. During a similar interview, Burrow said, I can see how we both use this opportunity to design a better world, but we need both national and multilateral institutions to make it work, end quote. Later, Burrow added, quote, we must ensure this design is inclusive of universal social protection. The world could fund it right now, and yet 70% of the world's population has no social protection. It must be respectful of public services rather than simply trying to profit from them, end quote. Here, Burrow is not clear by what she means by universal social protection, which is not a term you often hear in the United States. However, on the website of the International Trade Union Confederation, which claims to represent 200 million workers in 163 countries, the organization spells out in detail what she's referring to. In a June 2020 campaign brief titled, The Global Social Protection Fund is Possible, the ITUC writes, quote, the COVID-19 pandemic has brutally exposed the fault lines of global divide between those who have universal social protection, including health and income support, and those that do not. ITUC later explains, social protection is essential for human security and social justice. It is a foundation for peaceful societies committed to building shared prosperity. It creates the basis for economic development and builds resilience against personal, national, or global shocks. A social protection floor includes basic income security, including cash transfers where necessary, pensions for the elderly, disability benefits, unemployment benefits and support, maternity protection and child benefits, among other nationally identified needs. In addition, and equally important, she continues, universal access to essential social services, including health, education, water, sanitation, and housing is vital, 287. Providing the entire world's population with a litany of government-funded social programs? I mean, I'd love to see the price tag on that one. No doubt it would make the $94 trillion Green New Deal in America look like an off-brand can of tomatoes on the discount shelf at Dollar General. The stated purpose of the Great Reset's proposed expansion of government, social protection, is to promote left-wing goals. Kristalina Georgieva, the managing director of the International Monetary Fund, said in a June 2020 address about the Great Reset that any economic recovery must focus on fairer growth, end quote. Quote, we know that if left to its own devices, this pandemic is going to deepen inequality. That has happened in prior pandemics, and we can avoid this if we concentrate on investing in people, in the social fabric of our societies, in access to opportunities, in education for all, in the expansion of social programs, so we take care of the most vulnerable people. Georgieva added, then we can have a world that is better for everyone. End quote. In the same talk, Georgieva then explained that the creation of the government-run healthcare system in the United Kingdom following World War II serves as an important, quote, example from the past of how governments can use crises to enact progressive reforms. Quote, I want to conclude with an example from the past, she said. William Beveridge. In the midst of the Second World War, he put forward his famous report in 1942, in which he projected how the UK should address what he called the five giant evils. That famous Beveridge report led to a better country after the war, including the creation of the National Health Service that is saving so many lives today in the UK. Now, of course, Georgieva left out how the National Health Service has for decades been poorly managed, underfunded, and associated with rationing and long wait times. According to the New York Times, a publication that often promotes left-wing causes like single-payer healthcare, quote, denying life-saving care to conserve public resources is nothing new for Britain's National Health Service, end quote. Quote, in expensive treatments for cancer and other diseases, the health service officially limits what it will spend to postpone a death. £30,000, or about $37,000, for each year of full quality of life provided to a patient. That's according to the New York Times, in case you were ever wondering how much you mean to the government the United Kingdom's bureaucrats went through the trouble of assigning specific value to your life. How thoughtful of them. Wow, this year's worth $37,000. In addition to calls for expanding universal social protection through government-run or government-managed healthcare and education programs, individual Great Resetters and others aligned with the World Economic Forum have also demanded a variety of large government programs that may or may not be part of a final Great Reset platform that could be released in 2022. Guy Standing, a professor in development studies at the University of London and a nominee for the Most Literal Name Ever Award, authored an article in April 2020 for the World Economic Forum titled, Coronavirus has shown us why we urgently need to make a basic income a reality. In the article, Standing argues that in this pandemic, the economy will not survive without a quasi-universal basic income program. Standing is not alone in demanding new basic income programs. In April 2020, the Assistant Secretary General of the United States and the Chief Economist for the Asia Pacific Group at the UN Development Program argued that the COVID-19 pandemic had made it apparent that it is now time to add a new element to the policy packages that governments are introducing. One we know, but one we have abandoned, the Universal Basic Income, UBI. It is needed as part of the package that will help us get out of this yawning pit. 295. It's impossible to say what additional multi-trillion dollar government social programs will be dreamt up at the World Economic Forum's various Great Reset meetings in the years to come. But based on other parts of the Great Reset platform, I think it's a safe bet to say, at the least, they would expand the power and influence of government bureaucrats and the ruling class. Now, before we move on, I want to once again stress the importance of resisting the urge to view the Great Reset as a socialist or even progressive framework. There are socialist and progressive elements to the plan. I just pointed them out. But we also have already encountered what should be a big red flag throughout this book. I've noted repeatedly that corporations, bankers, and some of the world's wealthiest people have proudly stood behind the Great Reset. Does anybody really believe that these Wall Street cutthroats and billionaire and entrepreneurs have suddenly become card-carrying members of the Democratic Socialists of America? No, of course they haven't. The real reason there are so many corporate and financial industry interests lining up to promote the Great Reset is because of money and power, the true driving force behind the reset. We're going to get into that topic in a lot more detail later in this chapter, but it's important to keep this point in mind as we navigate our way through this complex issue. The progressive and socialist elements to the reset are merely there to win support from some groups on the left while simultaneously expanding the power of elites. The ruling class has not, no matter what they say, had a real come-to-Bernie moment, which probably explains why you typically won't find Sanders at Davos cocktail parties. A Global Green New Deal. As I explained at length in Chapter 3, the most important long-term justification used by supporters of the Great Reset is that it is necessary for saving humanity from the existential crisis posed by climate change. In that chapter, I noted that Schwab has argued we only have one planet and we know that climate change could be the next global disaster with even more dramatic consequences for humankind. We have to decarbonize the economy in the short window still remaining and bring our thinking and behavior once more into harmony with nature, end quote. So, how exactly do Klaus and friends aim to bring Americans into harmony with nature? Well, by imposing an expansive, never-before-attempted global Green New Deal that would wipe out the use of most fossil fuels and replace conventional energy with wind, solar, and other earth-destroying green energy sources. Martina Larkin, she's a member of the executive committee at the World Economic Forum. She wrote in May 2020 that the Green Deal must be at the heart of the COVID-19 recovery in Europe. According to Larkin, the new forecast by climate experts at the Global Carbon Project predicts that carbon dioxide emissions could fall by the largest amount since the Second World War due to the impact of COVID-19 on economic activity. This means the carbon output could fall by more than 5% year over year, which is the first dip since a 1.4% reduction following the 2008 financial crisis. However, as economic activity resumes and countries and companies develop recovery strategies, quote, we need to fast track the structural changes towards a fossil-free economy. The European Green Deal could be the opportunity to leapfrog in this ambition. Achieving this transformative agenda and making Europe a leader in global climate transition requires a massive mobilization of public and private investments. The Commission estimates that reaching the net zero 2050 target requires at least 1 trillion euros of public and private investment over the next decade. However, as Larkin knows well, most European nations, just like the United States, do not have any cash available for all public and private investment needed to build literally billions of solar panels. They're running huge deficits. How do they plan to pay for the Green New Deal? Now you know, print the money, in line with the principles of Stephanie Kelton and other modern monetary theorists. There is simply no feasible way to pay for plans this ambitious without a monetary framework that would allow for absurdly high levels of government deficit spending. Larkin and Schwab are not the only Great Reset supporters who have called for massive green infrastructure plans as part of COVID-19 recovery. Just about everyone I could find that supports the Great Reset also backs some version of the Green New Deal, both in Europe and elsewhere. And many have begun attempting to link the pandemic to green infrastructure proposals in the earliest days of the coronavirus crisis. In March 2020, the World Economic Forum published an article titled, "Could COVID-19 Give Rise to a Greener Global Future?" An article was written by two academics and the co-president of the Club of Rome, a powerful nonprofit organization most famous for its 1972 book, The Limits to Growth, which predicted that modern civilization may not survive the 21st century because all of our resources are going to be depleted. According to the authors of the March article, the only way to save the planet is to use the COVID-19 pandemic to rebuild the global economy using policies such as the Green New Deal. Here's what they wrote, quote, "The coronavirus pandemic is a wake-up call to stop exceeding the planet's limits. After all, deforestation, biodiversity loss, and climate change all make pandemics more likely. Governments that succeed in containing epidemics all tactically follow the same mantra: follow the science and prepare for the future. But we can do much better. Rather than simply reacting to disasters, we can use the science to design economies that will mitigate the threats of climate change and biodiversity loss and pandemics. We must start investing in what matters by laying the foundation for a green, circular economy that is anchored in nature-based solutions and geared toward the public good," end quote. They then called on lawmakers to redirect public funding linked to fossil fuels toward green infrastructure, reforestation, and investments in a more circular, shared, regenerative, low-carbon economy. At the 2020 World Economic Forum virtual meeting, Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General of the United Nations, said the Great Reset should be used to build economies that are more sustainable, a term often used by great resetters as a stand-in for green energy. Guterres also called for economies to become more resilient in the face of climate change and many other global changes we face, end quote. What Larkin, Guterres, and Schwab don't mention, however, is that the financial institutions, the investors and corporations, would amass untold trillions of dollars if the Green New Deal were to become reality and spread globally. More on that a little later. Global cooperation. If you're wondering how all of this can be achieved on a grand scale without increasing the power of global governing bodies like the United Nations, then you're not alone. Although great resetters never say they want to abandon all notions of national sovereignty in favor of world government, they do make it clear that greatly empowering international organizations like the United Nations will be necessary under a Great Reset model. Schwab admits that the level of cooperation and ambition this Great Reset implies is unprecedented. But he says, quote, "It's not some impossible dream. It simply will require global cooperation on a gigantic scale." Quote, "This global pandemic has also demonstrated again how interconnected we are," Schwab said. "We have to restore a functioning system of smart global cooperation structured to address the challenges of the next 50 years. The Great Reset will require us to integrate all stakeholders of global society into a community of common interest, purpose, and action. Now, I hate to sound like a conspiracy theorist again, but a global community of common interest, purpose, and action sounds an awful lot like Schwab is suggesting we put international governing bodies in charge of the world economy, doesn't it? Fike C. Besma is a member of the Board of Trustees at the World Economic Forum and co-chair for the Global Center on Adaptation. He's a little clearer about the Great Reset's intention to usher in a glorious new era of enhancing global government, or at the very least, a high degree of global cooperation that would change societies around the world. According to him, the Great Reset requires improving global multilateral cooperation and aligning both the recovery of our economies and priorities of societies. For the Great Reset to succeed, we have to change the way we do business and manage health, nature, the environment, and societal issues at the same time. Despite the unprecedented impact in global spread, there was little cooperation between countries. In many aspects, it was everyone from themselves when buying ventilators, face masks, tests, and more. As healthcare for government is a domestic issue, countries did not explore multilateral joint approaches and solutions. Let's hope this was not the litmus test for other cross-border crises like climate change. Only via collaboration between countries can we address such issues, end quote. The stakeholder economy. Now, it's easy to look at the long list of left-wing government programs appearing earlier in the chapter and think that this is all about resetters and what they have in mind when they talk about pushing the Great Reset button on the global economy. But the truth is, as crazy as it might sound, the trillions of dollars in new spending, total destruction of the world's existing energy industry, and a creation of countless social programs like universal basic income and government-managed health care are not the most important parts of the reset or even part of the foundation of the plan. At the beginning of this chapter, I cited Klaus Schwab's broad outline for the Great Reset, and at the time I told you, his call is to steer the market towards fairer outcomes by, in part, creating the conditions for a stakeholder economy. This was something I told you should take note of because it plays a pivotal role in grasping just how big the Great Reset transformation would be. So now that you have a better understanding of some of the more overtly socialistic elements of the Great Reset, let's turn our attention to what Schwab and many others in the Great Reset movement mean by building a stakeholder economy. At first, the idea of a stakeholder economy is also commonly referred to as stakeholder capitalism. Sounds innocuous, right? I mean, even a little bit boring. After all, the idea of government and business officials caring about stakeholders, a term that normally means one who is involved in or affected by a course of action, does not sound very radical. But if you actually start to dig deeper into the Great Reset pit, you will quickly see that stakeholder capitalism represents a dramatic departure from our common understanding of market-based economies. Stakeholder capitalism is an economic system in which the companies are effectively required to put social justice causes and or the goals of elites, which of course vary wildly depending on parties involved, before profits, before supply, before demand, before the desires of consumers and other market forces that normally direct capitalistic systems, which, don't forget, have created the most prosperous, healthy, safe societies humankind has ever known. Our more traditional understanding of capitalism is also called shareholder capitalism by Great Resetters because they say it prioritizes the interest of the shareholders, another word for owners of the corporation, over the interest of the wider community. After calling for a change in capitalism, Fike C. Besma explained in an article for the World Economic Forum that under the Great Reset, the economic focus should shift from short-term and profit only to longer-term, incorporating value creation for people and the planet. So moving from shareholder value to stakeholder interests, end quote, 308. Schwab, who had long advocated for stakeholder capitalism, said in January 2020, business now has to fully embrace stakeholder capitalism, which means not only maximizing profits, but use their capability and resources in cooperation with the government and civil society to address the key issues of this decade. They have to actively contribute to a more cohesive and sustainable world. Shabesma further explained that the principles that must be embraced by companies in a stakeholder capitalist system focus on a longer-term economic strategy that is anchored in addressing the Sustainable Development Goals, SDGs, produced by the United Nations. When great resetters talk about shifting to a stakeholder model, they typically mean one centered on UN SDGs. So it's important to understand what the Sustainable Development Goals involve and why the Great Reset promoters are so interested in them. The Sustainable Development Goals were created at a meeting of the United Nations in September 2015. The SDGs, which serve as a successor to the United Nations Agenda 21 Sustainable Development Plan, yes, that Agenda 21, represent commitments made by UN nations to end poverty and hunger everywhere, to combat the inequalities within and among countries, to build peaceful, just, and inclusive societies, to protect human rights and promote gender equality and the empowerment of women and girls, and to ensure the lasting protection of the planet and its natural resources. That's a quote. And they want to do it all by 2030, footnote 311. If you ever hear anyone talk about Agenda 2030, it is almost certainly in reference to the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. By the way, go look at your local town zoning committee. I'm betting you're going to find a lot of, at least the logo of Agenda 2030 on their website. According to the United Nations, this collective journey is, quote, accepted by all countries and is applicable to all, taking into account different national realities, capacities, and levels of development and respecting national policies and priorities, end quote. In their commitment to the Sustainable Development Goals, member nations say they have imagined a world free of poverty, hunger, disease, and want, where all life can thrive. They also said, we see a world free of fear and violence, a world with universal literacy, a world with equitable and universal access to quality education at all levels, to health care and social protection where physical, mental, and social well-being are assured, a world where human habitats are safe, resilient, and sustainable, and where there is universal access to affordable, reliable, and sustainable energy, a world of universal respect for human rights and human dignity, the rule of law, justice, equality, and non-discrimination, of respect for race, ethnicity, and cultural diversity, of equal opportunity, permitting the full realization of human potential and contributing to shared prosperity. They further committed to a world in which every country enjoys sustained, inclusive, and sustainable economic growth and decent work for all. A world in which consumption and production patterns and use of all natural resources from air to land, rivers to lakes, and aquifers to oceans and seas are sustainable. One in which democracy, good governance, and the rule of law, as well as an enabling environment at national and international levels, are essential for sustainable development, including sustained and inclusive economic growth, social development, environmental protection, and the eradication of poverty and hunger. One in which development and the application of technology are climate sensitive, respect biodiversity, and are resilient. One in which humanity lives in harmony with nature and which wildlife and other living species are protected. Wow. I mean, I understand the desire to aim high, but creating a world full and free of want? I mean, I want a unicorn and clouds made out of cotton candy. Is the United Nations promising any of these things? Fat dads like me love cotton candy clouds, and we demand to know. I realize a lot of this sounds like your standard pie-in-the-sky globalism from the United Nations, and that is because... That is exactly what the Sustainable Development Goals are. But this doesn't mean that they're meaningless. They certainly have a lot of value to supporters of the Great Reset who want to use these goals as a springboard to control economic activity while making their corporate friends filthy rich. But how exactly does that work? Schwab and other Great Reset supporters want to transform the current global economy into one which every company focuses more on advancing SDGs, or whatever else the ruling class deems important, than profits. In December 2019, Schwab and the World Economic Forum released its Davos Manifesto 2020, which outlines some of the core values of a new stakeholder economy. In a stakeholder economy, the manifesto notes, quote, "The purpose of a company is to engage all of its stakeholders in shared and sustainable value creation. In creating such value, a company serves not only its shareholders, but all of its stakeholders, employees, customers, suppliers, local communities, and society at large," 316. Now, let me put this in much clearer terms. In a stakeholder capitalist system, companies should first serve the collective according to the demands of the ruling class in government, not the customers, not the owners. Stakeholder capitalism is just another way of saying collectivist capitalism, which is not capitalism in any way. To many Americans, perhaps even some reading this book, the concept might not sound all that worrisome. You might be thinking, okay, so under the Great Reset, companies would have to factor in other considerations in addition to profits. So what? I get it. I do. That's why this is so sexy. Before dismissing my concerns, I want you to stop and think for a minute about the implications of this idea. A profit-driven model for business ensures that companies put the consumer first. Under this system, individuals dictate the products and the services that are produced by voting with their dollars. Companies that want to survive listen to the demands of their customers and even try to anticipate them. But in a stakeholder system, individuals are replaced by an elite group of Bond villain wannabes in the ruling class. They dictate which products and services are produced and who ought to be hired to provide them to customers. Not you, not the individual. Understanding ESG. How can the Great Reset overlords know which companies are properly pursuing the right goals? Well, to help push business in the direction the elites in society deem best, the World Economic Forum, business leaders, financial institutions, activists, and government officials from all around the world have developed environmental, social, and governance, ESG, metrics. They can help companies, investors, governments, and the public know who the good businesses are and which scoundrel companies are interested only in turning a profit, developing new products, hiring more employees. Now, there is nothing worse than a company looking to hire more employees and earn a profit in the marketplace, right? Although there are several versions of this ESG metrics that are available today, the metrics promoted by the World Economic Forum and the International Business Council, a group created by the WEF in 2001, are perhaps positioned best to become the international standard in the coming years. The final draft of the WEF metrics, titled Measuring Stakeholder Capitalism Toward Common Metrics and Consistent Reporting of Sustainable Value Creation, was released in September 2020. It was prepared in collaboration with experts from the Bank of America and the Big Four accounting firms, Deloitte, KPMG, PricewaterhouseCoopers, and Ernst & Young, all of which worth tens of billions of dollars and widely considered to be the most influential and powerful firms in the world. You know, real down-to-earth people who know what life is like for the average everyday worker. The World Economic Forum's ESG standards include 21 core metrics and 34 expanded metrics. Together, they allow auditors to develop a comprehensive ESG score that can be used to determine whether a company is in line with the demands of the ruling class. Footnote 318. The standards are divided into four pillars: principles of governance, planet, people, and prosperity. Although some of the core metrics that compose each pillar are reasonable and even advisable, like closely tracking incidents of corruption confirmed during the current year but related to previous years, many others are clearly designed to advance social justice causes favored mostly by those on the left. In the principles of governance pillar, WEF suggests that companies be scored based on the membership of underrepresented social groups serving in a company's governing body, as well as those leaders' competencies relating to economic, environmental, and social topics. Let me just make a side note here. So you're underrepresented in Silicon Valley if you're a conservative. So you would say ESG would demand that you are up unrepresented, you should be on the board of directors. Not so fast. You also have to have competency relating to economic, environmental, and social topics. You see how you can quickly be boxed out? In the planet pillar, companies are evaluated based on their greenhouse gas emissions and their compliance with the Paris Climate Accords, their land use and ecological sensitivity, and their water consumption and withdrawal in water-stressed areas, among other environmental standards. The people pillar is full of woke ideology, including an ESG measure for the percentage of employees per employee category by age group, gender, and other indicators of diversity, e.g. ethnicity, as well as pro-labor union members, such as the percentage of active workforce covered under collective bargaining agreements. So now let's stop and think about that. What is the World Economic Forum's ESG model? What would it really look like in the real world? Well, under WEF standards, a company with a relatively large profit, high employee and customer satisfaction, and high quality products and services, a company that would be universally considered well-managed under a free market system, could actually be rated lower than a company in the same industry that is less efficient, has fewer profits, worse products and services, but has the ratio of Asian to black workers, low carbon dioxide emissions in their supply chain, and the ideal number of transgender members on the board of directors. Now, let's get one thing right out from the very start. Private businesses should have the right to engage in any number of silly, stupid, wasteful, noble, kind, compassionate, or ridiculous causes, or to hold themselves to standards that I think are foolish or counterproductive. As far as I'm concerned, if a business wants to create an ESG system that rewards corporations that give raises only to workers who like the color green or pay salaries ending in odd numbers or are owned by people named Glenn, I'm fine with that. Investors, employees, and consumers should have the right to decide who they want to do business with. And if people want to spend their time and money doing business with only the wokest of the woke companies, then that should be their right. But for the most part, that system has existed in every market economy. Nothing has stopped consumers from buying from only those companies that choose to embrace their ideals. And nothing has stopped investors from investing in those companies. So what do Klaus Schwab and the other Great Reset elites have in mind when they say they want to advance the ESG model, tear down the existing shareholder capitalist system, and replace it with an economy focused on stakeholders? The answer is almost certainly twofold. The transformation could be brought on by either government mandates or the use of monetary incentives made possible by newly printed cash from central banks. Under the first option, governments around the world could start building stricter regulatory schemes that directly or indirectly force businesses to focus on improving ESG scores rather than profits in order to continue operating in certain nations or regions or to continue being publicly traded corporation. Some governments have already started putting into place regulations that force companies to act responsibly in line with the concerns of the elites. As the World Economic Forum project specialist Elizabeth Envig noted in a May 2020 WEF article calling for the Great Reset, quote, legal and societal pressures on businesses operating around the world are rapidly evolving. There is a call for efforts to better align the activities of corporations with society's drive to build a more inclusive, equitable, and sustainable economy. The implementation of the Sustainable Development Goals, SDGs, and Agenda 2030 will depend on positive contributions from the private sector through responsible business conduct and responsible investments. Doing the right thing is about more than just complying with the law. However, legal obligations are increasingly requiring companies to act responsibly. 321. In some cases, American investors and businesses themselves are begging for regulatory agencies to use their power to impose social justice and environmental causes. In July 2020, a group of more than three dozen large investors, activists, nonprofits, pension funds, and former politicians, which together manage nearly $1 trillion in assets, sent a letter to the Federal Reserve, that's America's central bank, the Securities and Exchange Commission, and other regulatory bodies, asking them to impose rules that would supposedly help stop climate change. According to the New York Times, the letter read in part, quote, the climate crisis poses a systemic threat to financial markets and the real economy, with significant disruptive consequences on asset valuations and on our nation's economic stability. The Times further reported, quote, that financial threat combined with the physical risks posed by climate change may create disastrous impacts, the likes of which we have never seen before, the letter says. It urges the Fed, the Securities and Exchange Commission, and other agencies, quote, to explicitly integrate climate change across your mandates, end quote. These investors are asking the U.S. government to do everything in its power to force other companies to adopt their woke causes, bringing to mind the old statist slogan, ideas so good, they're mandatory, end quote. Similarly, according to the World Economic Forum, Ma Jun, the chairman of the China Green Finance Committee and an avid supporter of the Great Reset, has called for the reset to include, quote, tighter reporting and regulation for companies, end quote, to ensure they are working harder to advance environmental goals. Regulatory agencies in the United States are listening. In March 2021, Perkins Coie, a highly influential international law firm, reported, quote, over the past few weeks, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission has taken several actions that put climate change front and center, reflecting the importance to many investors of climate change-related disclosures. In early February, the SEC announced the addition of Satyam Khanna as a senior policy advisor charged with coordinating and overseeing efforts related to climate and other environmental, social, and governance issues. Mr. Khanna is the first ever senior policy advisor for ESG issues at the SEC. Since then, the SEC has announced a rapid series of additional initiatives. President Biden's nominee to be the next SEC chair, Gary Gensler, said during his confirmation hearing that investors want more information about climate risks and that disclosure requirements should be grounded in what reasonable investors find material. If confirmed, Mr. Gensler indicated to the Senate Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs that he would likely pursue rulemaking around climate risk disclosures and perhaps other ESG topics. 325. Side note, between the printing of this book and the recording of this session, he is now serving officially as the chair of the SEC. Additionally, in August 2021, Bloomberg writer Bill Dudley outlined some of the radical developments underway at the U.S. Federal Reserve, led by Chair Jay Powell, who is eagerly working to build a regulatory framework that can be used to push banks and companies they do business with to adopt climate and energy policies favored by the left. Powell and the Fed Board of Governors created two new entities, the Financial Stability Climate Committee, to focus on the broader financial system, and the Supervision Climate Committee, to focus on individual institutions. Now, this matters because it means top officials are committed to regularly evaluating and responding to the threat of climate change. They've already been working to ensure that banks embed climate change in all of their business decisions, analyzing exposures, identifying concentrations of risk, and considering how to manage them over time. 326. The recent developments at the SEC and Federal Reserve are vital because they will serve as the foundation for future Great Reset economic transformations in the United States by providing lawmakers in Washington with all of the tools that are needed to push companies towards full ESG adoption. And they are already acting as a warning to American businesses that future regulatory changes are just around the corner. But as troubling as things are in America, the situation is much worse in Europe, where many political figures have been working for years to make ESG standards mandatory for all large businesses and many small businesses. As my co-author Justin Haskins reported in June 2021, in March, the Parliament of the European Union passed a resolution that seeks to require nearly all of the EU's largest companies and many small businesses too, to adopt and prioritize ESG metrics. And especially important for U.S. business and consumers, the resolution would further require that EU companies only work with those who share the European Union's environmental, social, and governance standards, end quote. In a report about the European ESG resolution, international law firm Shearman & Sterling noted, quote, if adopted, all EU member states will be required to implement the directive into their national laws. This will result in substantive due diligence requirements being imposed on companies, whether they're based in the EU or selling their product and services to the EU across the entire value chain, with potential sanctions for non-compliance, end quote. Okay. So understanding what the European officials mean by value chain is really important. In their resolution, value chain is defined as all activities, operations, business relationships, and investment chains of an undertaking and includes entities with which the undertaking has a direct or indirect business relationship, upstream and downstream, and which either A, supplies products, parts of products, or services that contribute to the undertaking's own products or services, or B, receive products or services from the undertaking, end quote. 329. That means if the EU resolution were to become law, and at the time of this writing it is looking more and more likely, all U.S. businesses having any direct or indirect relationship with an EU business, upstream or downstream, would be forced to operate under some or all of Europe's proposed ESG system. Now, it's not true that all great resetters are calling for the use of regulations to impose ESG standards on private companies, at least not in every situation. In some cases, they talk about adopting ESG voluntarily. In 2019, Schwab encouraged businesses to adopt stakeholder capitalist principles voluntarily so that they can move beyond their legal obligations and uphold their duty to society. 331. This is where the second method for creating a stakeholder economic system comes into play. Rather than use regulations to impose environmental, social, and governance standards on companies, some great resetters just want to use massive government and central bank spending programs to push companies towards adopting ESG standards, a move that looks eerily similar to proposals backed by people like modern monetary theorist Stephanie Kelton, who has long suggested that the best way to progress society is to not only expand the power of government, but also print trillions of dollars and tie social justice strings to the money. Pursuing modern monetary theory principles like those supported by Kelton would make it unnecessary to completely dismantle private property ownership. Government and central banks would become the biggest and most important consumers in the marketplace, which, of course, would not and could not function as true markets because of the outsized power and influence of government and central bank spending programs.